Now, our Friday interview, the athlete Liz McColgan was the very popular winner of the BBC Sports Personality of the Year in 1991. Her life over the 20 years since has been lived out in the spotlight. Apart from a very public court case in 2011, she was accused of assaulting her estranged husband but cleared when the case came to court. I spoke to her earlier about her career and her life since, including that case. And I asked her first if her upbringing in Dundee was a happy one.
I was as happy as what it could have been. I was from like a very working class background, sort of a council estate where a lot of unemployment, people lived off of government money and didn't have a lot, but just made do with what you had, really.
Was it an athletic family? What were your parents like?
No, my mum and dad were very heavy smokers, obviously because of the finances. You know, you weren't brought up on the best of diet. I mean, I just got into running by chance, really. Nobody ever ran, and when I ran, it was kind of like mum and dad didn't even really know what I was doing, because I just used to take myself off and, you know, get my own way there and get my own way back. Because my circumstances, running kind of suited me because it didn't cost anything to do it. You know, I could just go for a run from my door. All I needed was a pair of training shoes, which, you know, at the time I never had the best of kit or anything. I just made do with what I had and sort of hand-me-downs.
You also had a PE teacher who saw potential in you and put you in contact with a local club.
Yeah, the first time I ever ran was at school, and the PE teacher Phil Cairns was a marathon runner, so during the winter he used to put us out on cross country runs, and he started like an after-school running club, which I joined, and he used to sort of bus us to inter-school races and things, and then he advised me to go up to the local club, which was the Hockhole Harriers, and his friend Harry Bennett was the coach there. I got discovered at the club by, we did like a charity relay race for to raise funds for the club. And with me being in the sprint group, none of the sprinters, you know, it was like continuous laps and they were all falling by the wayside, and I was able to keep going. And then at the end of the day, you know, Harry came up to me and said, look, you're in the wrong group, you should be a distance runner, and you're a pretty good one at that. And I changed groups from then on in.
Is there a point that sticks in your mind, Liz, where you weren't being told you were good, that you realised you were good, that you realised you had something extra?
Yeah, I think when I was at 16, I was one of these kids that, you know, pretty much did anything that was available at the school. You know, I did volleyball, netball, gymnastics. You know, I was really into sport, a bit of a tomboy, really. And I never really got a lot of encouragement as a youngster because I was from a fairly, you know, rough council estate, and people just sort of wrote you off before they even got to know you. When I was 16, Harry, my coach, took me aside from, I mean, we had a group of pretty good runners in the group. You know, there were a couple of girls who were British standard. He just said that he thought that I was really talented and the best runner that he'd seen, and that I really need to make a decision that, you know, if I want to be really good, I need to give up everything else. And it was the first time that anybody had ever actually given me a compliment or given me the confidence to think outside the box from where I was. You know, we decided there and then, yeah, I wanted to run, and I dropped everything. And I started training twice a day. Unfortunately for me, Harry died when I was 19. You know, it was really him that actually installed even my beliefs in distance running today, really stemmed from what I learned as a youngster from him.
And to give up everything and devote yourself to what you're wanting to achieve, there are sacrifices there. Did that weigh heavily on you?
It didn't really seem like a sacrifice because, you know, I really enjoyed my running so much. And at the time, I wasn't the best runner. I wasn't like outstanding at 16. I just had a really, really big work ethic. You know, I could put a lot of work in, a lot more than a lot of the other youngsters, and I was really focused on what I did. I was quite sort of strong-minded. I think he saw those traits. I didn't feel that I missed out by not going to discos or, you know, hanging out with friends, or, you know, because all my friends became my friends and socialised at the club with like-minded girls and boys that were just really into their sport.
What's the race or title that sticks in your mind as being really momentous?
It's a difficult one, really, because it depends on different reasons. I think the Commonwealth Games in 1986 has to be a big thing for me because I was a nobody and it was my first big breakthrough, and it kind of opened an awful lot of doors for me to get into races. And I also put my name sort of up in the lights, as they say. You know, people then knew who I was. Before that date, nobody had a clue of who I was.
And obviously, you took gold in Edinburgh. that personal sense of achievement of being at the very top, the very best, whether people value you or not, or people know that you're good, is that actually important to you as an athlete? Or is for you and your family knowing about it?
Yeah, I think all down to individuals. You know, a lot of individuals, athletes, are out to prove, you know, like how many gold medals I got means how good I was. But for me, the beauty of distance running, it's your own self-worth. What I like about athletics is, it's you that puts the work in, and it's you that has to perform on the day, and that's the pressure of the sport. It's blood, sweat and tears, and it's yours, and it's for you to actually go out there and perform. And to me, it was never about people patting me on the back. For me, it was always about, you know, just how fast could I go. I loved pushing myself. I was probably too hard on myself at some times. I think the most rewarding thing about me and my sport was when I got my world records, because when I broke the world record, I knew then that I was the fastest person in the world and nobody was faster than me, and that's kind of me tick my boxes sort of thing.
So sometimes, Liz, you know, over the years when I've been interviewing people who have been successful, when I've asked them the question, did they enjoy their success? It's remarkable how many people have said to me, do you know what? No, that they were putting so much work into it. And did you enjoy your success? You know, you had the BBC Sports Personality of the Year in 1991. You were at the very top. You won gold. Did you enjoy the success?
To be honest, I never gave myself the time to enjoy the success. When I won the BBC Sports Personality of the Year, I was probably the only person that's ever won that award and never went to the after party, because I went back to the hotel because I was up for like a training run in the morning, and then I had a race at the end of the, you know, come in the following week. And it was like a roller coaster for me. As soon as I had success, I was always on to the next one, how I could be better. And I always say to, you know, my daughter runs now, Ailish, and I always say to Ailish, you know, my one regret in my whole of my career is that I never actually took time out to enjoy success. So whenever she has success, I always make sure that she takes the time to enjoy it, because you never know what's around the corner, you know, and it's too late to go back and say, oh, but, you know, I remember when I was world champion, or I remember when I broke the world record for the half marathon, or I remember when I won the London Marathon. You can never relive that moment.
And when you say that you didn't take the time to enjoy it, what does enjoy it actually mean? Did you not feel successful? Did you not feel good about yourself? What was it that you weren't enjoying?
I think the secret of success is sharing it with people. I mean, I think that's why I always remember the Commonwealth Games, because at the Commonwealth Games, I had my mum and my dad and my family there, which I never had anywhere else. When people are there to enjoy it, then you see the happiness that it's created, and it just gives you that big buzz. You know, when I was at the Commonwealth, you know, everyone in the stadium that was there at Meadowbank that day played a part in winning that medal and played a part in sharing the sort of the triumph and the enjoyment of that medal. Whereas when I won other things, it wasn't the same. And when you haven't got that sort of time to share it with people, you know, especially with me, I mean, I'd win the London Marathon the very next day. I was sitting there planning, you know, well, you know, how am I going to win New York? And just never taking the foot off the pedal. You know, it was always pushing myself forward all the time. Because of my upbringing, I always feel that I've got to prove myself more than I really need to or should.
Which puts yourself under, presumably, a tremendous amount of stress.
I think stress for me is my running actually helps deal with stress, because I know that when I don't run, I don't cope as well with issues. So when I'm running, I can actually de-stress myself by, you know, working things out on a run and thinking things with a clearer head after a run. And I think that a lot of exercise does that for a lot of people. I think stress for me as an athlete was not wanting to fail, and putting so much pressure on yourself all the time, that analysing and over-analysing and really putting too much, like, it's like when I won my silver medal in Seoul, I was so enthralled with people being disappointed that I didn't get the gold, that I didn't see a silver as a triumph or a good thing.
Which is
and
a real...
I saw Paula Radcliffe in Athens, and you actually seen her sitting down on the roadside crying because she had injured and she couldn't finish the race. And it wasn't until I saw that there that I realised then that, you know, I was too hard on myself, because even to get a medal in the Olympics is such an achievement that, you know, I shouldn't have been disappointed or feel that I let people down. I should have said, well, you know what, I wasn't good enough to win it on the day, but at the same time, to get a silver medal is a good achievement. And so, that's the kind of things and stresses that I used to put on myself.
It's a real pity, isn't it? Do you not think, as we all get older, I don't know about you, but you start to look back on your younger years and, happiness in life is much more important, actually, than the ambition that you have when you're younger. Certainly for me, contentment and happiness and making the most of good moments in life as I get older is much more important to me. And it just strikes me, as you've really accurately described today, there you were with a silver medal. Like, what a huge achievement. And you were disappointed. And on a downer that you didn't get a gold rather than celebrating the silver.
Yeah, I know. But, when you're in that little bubble of... I was actually quite lucky. I had quite a long career in athletics. You always hear an awful lot of people that, when they stop the sport, it's like they've got nothing else in life. So, they go on a right down and it's like, their life's kind of ruined because they've got no balance in it. Whereas, although I was very sort of focused on my running and I always knew that it would be one day that I would never run, and I'd always prepared myself for that. You'll have your kids and you'll be more relaxed and you can chill out. It's kind of like myself, I didn't touch alcohol until I was about 30, but, I could actually enjoy a glass of wine now. Things change as you get older, and as a 19, 20, 27-year-old that's really in the midst of the highest level of the sport, obviously your ethos and your mindset is going to be totally different as to, being more relaxed and chilled about things.
Very much so. And we're talking about a lot in this interview about pressure, and I guess no more pressure than when there is a family breakdown. Like, what a massive moment in your life. Family very important to you. And, your marriage didn't survive. And then on top of that, you were recently involved in a court case with your husband. Like, man, that's pressure.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on that. And the pressure for me through the divorce and the court case and that wasn't pressure for myself. It was actually protecting my children. I really don't care. That's probably the wrong word, really. But I really don't care what people's perceptions of me are because I'm an adult and I can handle it. What really affected me was the children, seen on billboards about, their mother assaulting the father, and which was obviously proven the case.
And Liz, just to set this out for people listening at home, your marriage had broken down, but you were still living in the same house as your husband. And the accusation that he made, and you were cleared of this, was that you punched him twice in the face. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was the accusation, but it was proven that, it wasn't the facts of what happened. And for me, it was a very, very difficult decision to leave the marriage, which I did decide to do. And the reason I did that was because I knew that it wouldn't be a happy place for the children anyway, and especially the way that we had been living prior to separating.
After the accusation was made, you were arrested in front of your children. Is that right? What happened?
It wasn't nice at all. I was playing rounders with the children in the garden, and two police women came up and asked me who I was, and I said who I was, and they said that they were police and that I had been arrested and that I had to go and find someone to look after my children. I was absolutely flabbergasted. I could not believe it. And I said, what am I supposed to have done? They said, you need to go to the police station. And I said, well, I have to get my children looked after. And the problem with me with my children is the fact that two of them are diabetic and they need insulin. So it's not like you can just leave them with my mum, who's like 74 years of age and doesn't do injections. So I had to then scurry about trying to find my sister, and she had to leave her work and run up to my house. Her and my mum had to look after the kids, and I got carted off, fingerprints and pictures, everything, threw in a cell. It was ridiculous.
Did the police arrest you in front of your children, actually speak to you in front of your children, or did they take you aside?
Yeah, I was in the garden playing. I was actually in the garden playing rounders with them, and they were like, what's happening? And they started crying and everything, and I was like, I just couldn't believe it. You would never have ever have thought that, that a situation like that would arose at your own house.
How did you handle, Liz,
again,
in your mind being... being fingerprinted. Yeah, I'm trying to think of you walking into a police station, you know, you'd been the BBC Personality of the Year, Sports Personality of the Year, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you're then standing in a police station getting fingerprinted and being put into a cell. How did you cope with that in your head?
To be honest, the police at the station were really good. I mean, they were as good as what they could have been about what they had to do. But again, it goes back to your childhood of, like, you know, survival. And, you know, I cope very well under stress like that. You know, I'm able to sort of calm myself down. And, I mean, my whole thing when that happened in the garden was just children, making sure that they were comfortable and that they weren't upset, and that when my sister and my mum come up, that it would be all right type of thing. You know, calm them down first and then just deal with the situation as it arose. One of those things that you just don't envisage, but that's life, and it's the way it goes, and you deal with it, you know.
Did the shame of being arrested, of having to go to court, hurt you?
It didn't hurt me, because the only thing that I felt really bad about was, you know, that the fact is that there are women that actually do beat up their husbands, and there's men that are in situations like that that would maybe, you know, because of the way that court case went, would maybe be put off of even going forward and getting help. It doesn't help people that are in that position. And you know, I felt really bad for that. And at the end of the day, I was never at all at any stage worried about getting found guilty, because I knew myself that it didn't happen. And, you know, there was no way that that could have been proven in court, because it didn't happen. And so I was very, very confident and comfortable in my own mind as to what happened that day.
Would you find it hard to trust a man again?
No, not at all, because you can't judge one person by someone else. Definitely not. Just because I've had one bad experience that's going to happen again. But, you know, everyone's different in the way that they are. And
Liz, we've talked about how you're a fighter, and how about, you know, you'll have these things thrown at you and you'll deal with them. You had a business, a gym business, which has recently been made bankrupt.
Yeah.
There's another huge issue in someone's life. Talking about pressure.
That was a difficult one to deal with, because not only is it my business, I also had staff working for me, so I had people that I was responsible for, which I felt really, really bad about. But the situation was, you know, we separated, and I tried to run the gym for over nearly 2 years. Just couldn't keep my head above water. So, you know, I felt, as I say, my loyalties were to my staff, who, you know, for 2 years knew the situation that I was in and really were helpful and supportive, trying to keep the business going. So I felt really gutted for them, really, more than myself, really.
So what's the future hold for you, Liz?
That's a good question.
What are your goals now?
I'm just in a situation where, you know, I'm waiting on a divorce, which is at the end of February, and once that's finalised, it's just really me restarting again. And, you know, I'm not scared to restart. There's a lot of things that I could still get myself involved in. So, you know, it's just a matter of me regrouping and, you know, just making sure that the children have a happy childhood. And, you know, they're very settled now. They've handled it well. It seems, you know, quite stable in their environment. So it's just a matter of making sure that they're okay and, you know, I just move on. You know, I'm just ready to move on to the next chapter, really.
And your own daughter's an athlete. You're coaching her.
Yeah, Mia's doing really well. She got to the Olympics last year.
Fantastic.
But, she went to her first training camp up in Kenya altitude, and she came back, and I'd say she's running the best I've ever seen her. Yeah, the future's looking bright for her.
Well, I hope it looks bright for you too, Liz. And thanks so much for sharing your story with us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.